Susan Zepeda is the president and CEO of the Foundation for a Healthy Kentucky. Her background in the field of healthcare is extensive, and you can get those details online at healthy-ky.org. In early May, the Foundation Dr. Zepeda heads convened a variety of stakeholders in Kentucky's Medicaid program, physical, behavioral, and oral health providers, consumers and consumer advocates, public health professionals, academic researchers, health systems, and payers. The aim was to gather feedback on Kentucky's plan to apply for a federal waiver that allows states to test and evaluate new ways to provide Medicaid. Dr. Zepeda joins us to talk about that feedback and what was learned. We thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And first, let's begin with that conference, if you could tell us what prompted it.
What prompted the May 12th convening was a sense that Kentuckians have things to say about a Medicaid waiver. There's a lot of expertise and a lot of experience across the Commonwealth, not just from the payers and providers, but from the consumers who use Medicaid to access needed healthcare services. And we thought it would be helpful to give all of those players a voice in the conversation, if you will, and a place at the table in discussing what might go into a Medicaid waiver.
The foundation has been around now for 15 years and as such has a pretty good before and after perspective on the Affordable Care Act. In your view, what is your assessment of how the Affordable Care Act has performed in Kentucky?
Well, it's not just our assessment. We work with a group called the State Health Access Data Assistance Center, lovingly known as SHADAC, and they are doing a 34-month study for us of the experience of Kentucky with the Affordable Care Act, specifically with a state-operated exchange that was called Connect, and also with the former governor's decision to expand Medicaid, as was permitted under the Affordable Care Act, to anyone earning up to 138% of the federal poverty level. So what that did is it brought a lot of adults who had no children into eligibility for Medicaid. And what we've learned from the SHADAC study so far is that there's been a significant drop in the numbers of Kentuckians who are uninsured. And we've seen a pretty steady drop as folks have come online and utilized the exchange either to purchase insurance or to be eligible for insurance under Medicaid. With that, SHADAC tells us, we've seen people using preventive health services more than they did before. We've seen people accessing dental services. We've seen people accessing substance abuse services. And one of the things we know about getting care early, not surprisingly, is that it costs less than getting care later in a disease. When you don't have health insurance, it's not unusual to wait as long as you can and then maybe seek help in an emergency room in a crisis. Whereas if we're doing those early screenings and preventive health visits, you spot diseases early on, the outcomes are better and the costs are typically less.
You've hit on a lot of points there that we're going to go into a little bit more in depth in the interview. But first of all, the SHADAC study, when do you anticipate that will be complete?
The SHADAC study actually gives us reports on a quarterly basis, and it gives us annual reports.
So is it ongoing?
Yes, it is. It's a 34-month relationship with us. One of the things that they've just conducted, and the report will be out a few months away, is an interview, a telephone interview process with Kentuckians about their experience with Medicaid and with the Affordable Care Act.
Governor Matt Bevin has stated that Medicaid expansion must be transformed somehow to be sustainable. And I wonder what your position is on that and what you found in your May 12th conference is the response of those who attended.
Well, we were excited to see the numbers of people who came to the table with innovative suggestions for making Medicaid work better. Things from streamlining on the administrative side, to innovative ways to deliver care. And that really dovetails with some of the work that the foundation has funded over the years. You mentioned our 15 years of experience. We have funded a number of pilot projects in communities to let people try innovative strategies. When I say innovative strategies, it's things like using telehealth or even telepsychiatry so that people don't have to travel from remote rural areas to see a specialist with the expertise they need. We've also funded some demonstration projects that make us believe in the value of community health workers, lay trained workers in the community who can help people navigate the complexities of the healthcare system. So when folks came together on May 12th, they had these and lots of other ideas about ways that we can make Medicaid work better and cost less.
The governor has been looking for ways to save money. He's got his eye on the huge pension deficit that we have here, and that, of course, is a grave concern for everybody in the state. He has said that Medicaid recipients should have some skin in the game, is a way he put it. And he cited Indiana, which received a federal waiver that allows it to charge premiums based on income levels to people who want benefits beyond the basic Medicaid program. How was this idea received among the people who attended the meeting?
Well, the folks who were with us on May 12th were loud and clear that they don't want to see penalties. For example, they don't want to see someone dropped off the Medicaid rolls because they've been unable to pay a premium. But they were more favorably inclined toward premiums than they were toward co-pays. And the understanding behind that is a premium is a known fixed amount that you can budget for. When you walk into get care at different settings, the co-pays may be very different from one visit to the next. And if you should happen to have a serious illness and a substantial co-pay, we would never want that to derail people from getting the care that they need.
Kentucky Medicaid Commissioner Stephen Miller says that the negotiations that are going on with federal officials at the Department of Health and Human Services indicate to him that they will not approve a plan that requires Kentucky's expanded Medicaid population to pay for a portion of their health insurance. So it would appear that that's not going to fly anyway.
And then another opportunity is banking financial benefit to participants who avail themselves of preventive health services, who engage in a smoking cessation program or an exercise program. Not clear exactly how that could happen. It could be a health savings account where resources are put in that account if you engage in your own self-care in a positive, healthy way. That's another way to have skin in the game. Some of us believe that our doctor can fix anything that ails us. But more and more Americans are coming to understand, and Kentuckians are coming to understand, the role we play with the actions we take to reduce our risk for chronic diseases.
I'm just going to add this parenthetically, because this question could change by the time that this goes to print and goes to air, because it apparently is not decided yet. But starting in January 1st, we will have to pay 5% of the cost of those who have joined Medicaid under the expanded eligibility created by the Affordable Care Act. That goes up in annual steps to the limit of 10% in 2020. And it's been suggested by Commissioner Miller that this could be offset by cuts in such things as vision and dental care. Have you heard that, and are you concerned about that?
Well, I've heard conversations about what constitutes an essential service. The feds obviously have laid out a set of essential benefits, and vision care is not on that short list, is my understanding. And yet, on the other hand, if you want somebody to be effective in the workplace, it helps if they can read things that are put before them. It helps if they can hear instructions. So vision and hearing are certainly important. And dental care is another area where even though cosmetic dental care has never been included, often a decision to hire or not hire someone who's going to sit on a front desk, whether we like it or not, has a certain amount to do with how they present to the public. And those missing teeth could impair a worker's ability to stay on the job.
As mentioned earlier, Governor Bevin has an eye on tackling the pension deficit. It's serious, and we all know that it is. But in addition to that, what is the cost, Dr. Zepeda, of having so many people without access to health care?
The short answer is that when people don't get timely care and they defer their care, it ultimately costs more. It costs more for them personally, and it costs more for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We know that chronic diseases are a challenge in our state, and late-stage care of chronic diseases is both financially costly and the outcomes are less promising. So one of the things that's exciting about what's happening with more people insured is that they're getting that preventive care that they need in a more timely manner, and they're learning and engaging in strategies for taking care of themselves. Now, the folks who met on May 12th didn't just look to what happens within the care delivery from the patient perspective. They also looked at it from the provider perspective, and they had a number of suggestions for ways to streamline the administrative costs of engaging with Medicaid. So there are cost savings that would be available from everything from having a single formulary, that's a list of allowed prescriptions for all the managed care organizations, to having the same pre-approval processes for procedures across all the managed care organizations, and to even, some suggested, having fewer managed care organizations to deal with. So that fragmentation and those differences have been driving up administrative costs for the caregivers who want to participate in Medicaid.
Well, and it's no secret that Kentucky has a stereotypical problem in this area. I think it was Dr. Lee Todd, when he was leading UK, who identified it as one of the Kentucky uglies. We have a terrible oral health record in Kentucky.
And what folks don't seem to realize is the head really is connected to the body. And when you have abscesses and infections there in your mouth, yes, that's oral health, but it can also put your pregnancy at risk if you're pregnant. And it can lead to systemic infections with all kinds of adverse consequences. Not sure how in the dusty history of health we separated the head from the body, but we at the foundation have certainly been funding pilot projects and arguing for reconnecting them. Behavioral health is another area. A few years back, we brought a fellow named Steve Malik, who's a health economist, to come talk to people at our annual health policy forum. And he had the data clearly demonstrating that if you ignore a behavioral health problem, you wind up spending an awful lot on treating other medical problems that have a behavioral component, whereas if you face it head on and address the behavioral health issues, the overall costs go down.
It is pretty interesting the way we've managed to compartmentalize these things, isn't it? As though they were not connected. The Foundation's report on the findings of that May 12th conference summarizes participants' suggestions and concerns. They're grouped into, I think, 8 categories. What did you hear that stands out as especially important or worthy of consideration?
Well, there were a couple of things that we call cross-cutting themes that emerged from the conversation. Partly, they surprised us because we didn't prompt them. The conversation was framed around strategies that other communities had used in Medicaid waiver processes. But two things that came out strongly, one I was just speaking about, is this issue of better integrating behavioral health and oral health into the primary care setting so we don't create these discontinuities in care. And the other major theme was a recognition that a lot of our health has to do with stuff that happens outside the clinic in the doctor's office and the hospital. It has to do with issues like whether we have safe and affordable housing, whether we have access to good education, safe places to play, safe places to walk or ride your bike, those kinds of community-level interventions that really help people stay well or get well.
Earlier, you mentioned the uninsured rate in Kentucky, and that rate has dropped to roughly one-third now of where it stood as the Affordable Care Act went into effect. Was Connect, which you also mentioned, the state-based health benefit exchange, responsible for that?
Well, when you have a lot of things happening at the same time, it's hard to say which particular thing is responsible. It's clear that Kentucky did a great job of getting the word out about the availability of Medicaid and also of more affordable approved health plans that could be purchased. And I think a lot of people went on the exchange looking to see if they could afford to pay the premiums. And when they learned about the tax credits that were available, I think folks were pleasantly surprised. And so there were people who qualified to purchase insurance, but the vast majority who enrolled through that exchange turned out to be eligible for Medicaid. And frankly, Tom, that speaks to the level of poverty in the state.
Governor Bevin is dismantling Connect. He's calling it redundant relative to the federal exchange. What's the foundation's position on Connect?
Well, the foundation doesn't have a position specifically on Connect. We have a position on access to affordable quality care. And Connect seemed to be working. It's clear that we need to give this next iteration an opportunity to see how it works and how well it works. With the study that SHADAC is doing for us, we'll be able to track and see if this results in people falling off the insurance rolls. If it doesn't, then we would say we've made a smooth transition to Benefind and the federal exchange.
I think some people, at least, maybe many people in Kentucky, are under the impression that Connect is now dark, but that's not the case, is it? It's still functioning at the moment.
We're still in a transition phase, and if memory serves me correct, I think November is the changeover date. When the new enrollment period starts, that's when Kentuckians will be working with this two-pronged system, going to the federal health website first to see if they qualify to purchase insurance there. And then if they don't, the fallback would be Benefind here in Kentucky. And Benefind's strength is that it permits people not just to apply for Medicaid, but to also be screened to see if they qualify for SNAP, what we used to call food stamps, for WIC, which is a nutrition program for pregnant women and women with small infants. So it's a better integration of all the possible programs that folks would be entitled to in a single process there. What's being broken apart from that is the private purchased insurance. One of the things that we're certainly aware of is that people move back and forth between eligibility for Medicaid and ability to purchase private insurance. And so a concern that we'll all be watching for is how smooth is that transition back and forth when there are two portals.
You're anticipating action by the Bevin administration on June 20th, I believe. What exactly
thereabouts?
What are you expecting to happen? And well, let's just leave it at that question. What's coming up?
Well, again, going back to the May 12th session that we held, a lot of good ideas were floated. What we weren't doing on May 12th and what needs to happen is crunching the numbers and seeing which of these good ideas are likely to pencil out and be at least revenue neutral, if not an actual cost savings. And there's a team at work right now led by Mark Birdwistle that is doing that hard work of trying to shape a program, a cohesive program that would improve access, or at least not impair access, and reduce costs and improve the overall health of the population. We sometimes call that the triple aim. But there's a lot of estimating, approximation, looking at past experience to see what the finances look like. Because the price tag when we get up to 10% copay is a real price tag for Kentucky. And while 10% doesn't look like a lot, the Medicaid program is a substantial program, and 10% of a lot of money is still a lot of money.
Seems safe to say that a lot of midnight oil is being burned right now in preparation for that.
I would believe that.
What do you hope to see emerge from all of these discussions about Medicaid?
Well, several things. One is it's hugely exciting to see the way providers and consumers and payers are willing to come to the table and talk about this opportunity in the Medicaid waiver to do care more effectively. to do care with a more streamlined administration. People want Kentucky to succeed. We want to be Kentucky proud. And to their credit, the administration is listening to those voices, as well as listening, of course, to the experience of other states around the nation.
Susan Zepeda, we thank you for your time.
Thank you.